Welcome again. It's time for another episode of The Next Chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. Great to be here. And a shout out to all our friends out there of this show. I'm Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie, where we uncover the motivations and tactics that we might implement as we move on to a new phase of our life. Now, today is March 15th, 2017. It's Wednesday, or 2015. It's Wednesday, 2007, or in Friday.
Let's get the numbers 17th. Right here.
Yeah, I'll get the numbers right. On the 17th is St. Patrick's Day. So, you know, what I got to do, I got to have an Irish guy on the show. I mean, it just, you know, it doesn't work unless you have an Irish guy.
I'm not enough of an Irish guy. We got to go get a real one.
You're three generations past. You don't count. I'm American Indian, three generations past, and I don't get to be called that. But, our guest and I are going to talk about the difference between American and Irish beer. No, we just lost, so we won't get into that.
I don't think so. We don't want to go to you talk about your 12-step program all the time. I don't think we want to go there. Right?
No, seriously. Today, my guest, I'm really tickled to have Nick Jordan, who is founder of Wells of Life. It's a group that is committed to bringing clean water to at least 1,000 communities in Uganda and beyond. Nick believes in combining business and philanthropy that allows him to inspire others to make a lasting difference in the world. As we will discover, Nick is a perfect example of what Bob Buford wrote, a book, Golly, in the 80s. It was titled Halftime, but with a wonderful subtitle, From Success to Significance. Nick was a very successful commercial real estate guy that had a chance to make a lot of money, live on a beach, and hang out. And instead, he chose to help needy people. Nick was born, raised, and educated in Ireland, holds a bachelor's degree from University College in Dublin. After fundraising for schools when he was in commercial real estate, he was funding schools in Uganda. In 2008, Nick witnessed overwhelming poverty and something that really struck him, and that was a lack of clean water. In 2009, he founded Wells of Life to bring clean water, beginning with work in Uganda. We're going to talk about Wells of Life, but before we do that, we're going to talk about Nick and how he made his transition. So welcome, Nick. It's nice to have you in the show. How are you doing?
Charlie, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me here.
It's good to have you. You know, this show is all about making changes in life to create meaning, adventure, and awe. In my mind, those are three things. If you have those in your life, you have a pretty good life. Now, you've made a handful of changes in your life. How would you describe yourself in light of these changes? Would you say you're adventurous? You're curious? Do you grow bored easily? Or does it have something to do with living a life of meaning and purpose?
Well, I'd say I'm thankful. I think that's the one word that would really sum it all up, because I give thanks to God every day for having had a dramatic change in course, and knowing that what Wells of Life is doing makes the world a difference is really the payback for me.
So you really feel like this was something that came to you from an outer resource. It came to you that God sort of touched you and said, we're going to change your life. No more real estate. Now it's going to be water.
Well, maybe not in those exact terms, but I think in principle, I would definitely agree that there was a change of direction. I think there was a lot of change leading up to it, nothing immediate, but standing a couple of miles from the source of the Nile in Uganda, I had no doubt in my mind that I heard loud and clear that the rest of your life is going to be very different from past part of your life, and water is going to be front and center.
You know, I just had a guest on last couple of weeks. We've talked about what it means to make changes in your life. And our guest last week, Taryn Vogt, one of my favorite people, advocated making changes in your life, going with your heart, going with your belief that you know that there's something that's going to happen, but you have no idea what that is. You have no idea what the end is going to be, but you know you've got a beginning. Did you have that kind of feeling when you started, or did you see the end?
Oh, I certainly didn't see the end. I think I was more concentrating on keeping both feet planted on the ground and staying upright. Change is a very messy phenomena. And I think anybody that thinks that they have a grip on change is kidding themselves. I simply chose to have a little tiny bit of faith and believed that there was purpose to releasing all of these expectations that I had and being willing to trust God with the outcome.
I'm the weirdo when it comes to change because I just believe in change. I've had a hard time calculating. It's between 5 and 7 careers in my life. I just always have to do different things. So let's sort of get a history. I'd like to understand your personality, your drivers and all that, and how you got to this point, because we really do want to focus on Wells of Life. Water has struck me personally as a global need that really needs to be addressed. But before we get to that, let's start earlier. How old were you when you left Ireland?
I emigrated at 28 years old.
At 28? You got to tell me about that. You're homegrown. You're stuck in the middle of, I mean, you're right in the middle of your growth process. What are you doing coming to the United States?
Well, I don't want this to sound too bad, but I guess I just have to say it as it is. And what I would have to tell you is that I've always been a little bit of a late starter and maybe a slow to bloom person. And my life started out in Ireland as a farmer's son, the oldest of 5 kids that in all reality, I should have been a farmer. But I had no interest other than getting the heck away from the land. I did not want to see myself tending sheep or anything else for that matter. Became a school teacher, which is a perfect transition. And after 4 years of teaching 3rd and 4th grade, I had a real hankering and a desire to spread my wings, so to speak. And back in the mid-80s, Ireland was exporting its people right, left and center. And it was wonderful and amazing to be able to receive the right to come to America and to grab a hold of my idea of the American dream. So I bought a round-trip ticket and off I went to beautiful Houston, Texas.
You bought a round-trip ticket, so just in case it didn't work, you could get yourself back.
Well, my mother required that I at least provide a round-trip ticket so she wouldn't have to say goodbye forever.
So what did you think you were going to do when you got to Houston?
Well, all of us Irish are very well informed about what happens in America. And we see things that are larger than life, bigger. We see possibilities. And we used to see that on TV. Our family would faithfully watch the soap Dallas. And that was the reason why I chose Texas as my first stopping point. I don't think it matters, really, if you believe in something, whether it's going to come true or not. But that was what prompted the move from Ireland to the United States. And just a willingness and a real desire to have another adventure or to find something that I hadn't found to date.
Well, see, I have a lot of people that are either out of work or they're very, very dissatisfied with their job and they would like to find another job. Here you come to a place and you got nothing. You don't have a resume. You have an Irish resume, but you don't have a United States resume. So how in the world, and you're 28 years old, you know, you're not a kid ready to go to school. You know, you're kind of really entering adulthood. How did you go about finding a job?
Well, I think I can only say, Charlie, that there's such a thing as an immigrant mind. And the immigrant mind is a powerful tool that says, give me an opportunity and I'll do whatever it takes to do something with it. And it doesn't matter what I have to do, meaning how long I have to work. I am a believer that there's something there to be found. So you're absolutely right. At 28 years old, I really should have been settling down by all accounts. But arriving to work on a ranch in Texas, earning minimum wage, certainly was financially going in the opposite direction. And I had a really tough time convincing my father that that was a wise move.
I like this immigrant mentality. I've never heard the term immigrant mentality, but it is this mentality that I am going to succeed. I'm going to do whatever it takes. I'm going to hang in there, and I'm going to figure it out. You've seen the United States from the outside. How did we lose that? You know, people are afraid to lose their jobs. They're afraid they're never going to find another job. You kind of had this mindset, I lose this one, I'll find another one. How does that come about?
Well, my own personal opinion is that I think it comes about when the family begins to break down and when you have a real blurred line between what is right and wrong and what is the true meaning of living a purposeful life. I think we all agree that it's service. And so today when we drive into our homes through our garage, we don't even barely say hello to our neighbors. We answer our telephone using an answering machine, and we open our mail over the trash can. So there's not a whole lot of interaction. If you go back 50 years in this country, family and community and belief in God were the cornerstones of everything. And I believe that's why, for a long period of time, America was the greatest and most amazing country on earth that people flocked to from the four corners of the earth. How did we lose it? I guess sometimes, like a river, you know, you start to meander. You lose your direction, and all of a sudden you get maybe a little fat and happy.
Yeah, you know, I think I wonder if it's not true more in the urban areas than it is in the rural areas. Because I notice in the urban areas, it's very, very common for people to move away from their families, and then they're starting a new community, looking for a new community. Some people are looking for a church, some people are not looking for a church, but they're looking for roots to settle down, and they end up working so much, they don't have this solid sort of basis from which they can decide what they want to do in life.
Right. We were just talking before the show came live about Ireland and, you know, talking about how relaxed the country is and, you know, how people really put so much time into making you feel at home. It's the land of a thousand welcomes. I think you really only see what something truly is when you leave it. I know I viewed Ireland differently when I returned, and I think the same applies to America. Sometimes we take things for granted that other people would just do anything to do. You have to be focused and intentional about how incredible it is just to be alive, to be able to be with the gift of life and work, opportunity, love, and friendship.
Boy, those are really important aspects. I think for so many of us, the freedom that we have, the love that we have, the opportunities that we have, and we end up watching football games on Sundays. In the last couple, in our last couple of episodes, we have talked, because it's a very big subject with me, about purpose in life. Is there such a thing as a purpose in life? Does your purpose in life change? I do believe your purpose in life can change. I believe you can have a purpose for a certain period, and then there comes a paradigm shift where you move on to something different. That's true with me, but it seems to me that you have found a purpose in your life. How did you figure that out?
Well, that's a great question, and I think the best way I can answer it is by saying that it was a period of time where I knew what the right thing to do was. I was involved in real estate. I think you were a little kind to me in the introduction. I mean, I was making a good living, being a real estate broker and the like, but I always believed that the roots of my life went back to my time in the classroom. So I always believed in education. Very early on, I was given the opportunity to help build some schools in Uganda. That just became the introduction. And slowly I started to see that it wasn't that difficult still to keep a job, to make a good living, and to give back. And hence I started to think, well, why can't you be a philanthropist, which is really just a fancy word for somebody that gives to other people, and also to maintain your job, your career, your family, your everything. And so that's where I saw, yes, building a school didn't happen in a moment. It was just put a group of people together. Everybody puts a little bit of money on the table. And the next thing, you have the gift of education 9,000 miles away in Uganda. Now, that happened for 4 years. But what really changed everything was when I traveled to Uganda.
And?
Well, that's when I had a front row seat to what life without water was like. I really got to see poverty. I saw it with a name and with a face. I saw it in little children that would come up to you, press their hand into yours. And you had a choice to make. You could either look away in disgust, or you could realize that there was something that you needed to do. And for me, I speak for myself, I couldn't turn away. I couldn't turn my face.
Yeah.
And I really had to search, how the heck was this going to fit into a life that was already pretty full, that had plenty of commitments? And that's where my turning point came.
So if I can backtrack a little bit, because we are going to spend time on Walls of Life, so don't worry about that. But I still want to build up to it. Am I correct in summarizing what you said, in that a purpose in life is something that you're doing that's outside of yourself, that you're benefiting something, some place, some organization, some people outside of yourself? That is where a purpose is, for creating something better for another person. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, my simple explanation is, it's, you know, it's that thing that, you know, you take to bed and your sort of last thought at night before you go to sleep is when you wake up in the morning, you know, it's there. And it's very difficult to be able to, you know, figure out what that exactly is. But I think it's so much more powerful than anything that you end up doing just to survive. It's a significant tap on the shoulder that says, hey, you're here for a purpose. It's way bigger than you. And do you mind acknowledging it and doing something about it? That, to me, is what purpose is. And,
and then how do you feel about it? How do you feel about yourself?
It becomes a personal choice of following that quest or finding ways to just say, oh, I didn't hear that, or that didn't happen, or stepping over onto the other side of the street and moving in a different direction.
You feel more complete after you made that decision? Did you feel like your life had more significance than it did before when you were only just trying to make money?
Charlie, I went to Uganda at a really low point in my life. I had some really difficult things happen. And quite frankly, it was probably a combination of just getting the heck away from, you know, California, America, San Juan Capistrano, just to see a different slice of life. What actually happened was, everything that I thought I was experiencing, it was like somebody took a eraser and just cleaned the chalkboard. And what I saw was
so
powerful.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, it was something that flashed right in front of my eyes that said, hey, quit your whining. There's something here that if you are willing to take a look at, can give you a lot more answers than you have right now. And that to me was seeing children sick and dying for lack of water. And I will just tell you that my earliest memory as a child, a four-year-old boy, was of walking with my mother to a spring well. And that was, you know, half a mile from our home. And all of a sudden, 40-something years later, I find myself in Uganda and I see women carrying water. And that very same image really was what flashed through my mind and said, there's something that can be done about this.
Okay, I'm going to ask one more question. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to get into Wells of Life. But here's my question. As I said several times, I'm sort of on the vanguard of baby boomers, you know, born in 1949. I'm just starting it. There's going to be a whole bunch of us pretty soon. You know, I don't know the percentage of the population, but I know it's a lot. Some of the people have cash, and they have a lot of opportunities. So they can, you know, they can give, they can use, they can do whatever they want to do. But what about those that haven't the financial resources, yet they're looking for meaning in life? Do you think philanthropy offers another opportunity for those people? Giving something offers an opportunity for people who don't have the financial status that they are used to?
I do. And what I think is that it's almost like taking a new breath, or maybe turning a new page. And I don't believe that philanthropy is all about just writing a check or making an endowment or leaving a large amount of money on the table for a good cause. I think a person, once they're grabbed by something that's of value and importance, when they invest themselves, meaning their time, into a cause, that is when it's like there's a magnetic pull that starts pulling them in the direction of that particular cause, and the growth and the exponential changes that happen as a result, that's where the new chapter comes, and it's a beautiful white page that you can write any part you want on your next chapter.
Okay, so let's get to the Wells of Life, but before we do that, we're going to take a break.
Hi, we're back with Charlie and his guest as we stare St. Patrick's Day straight in the face here.
As we stare St. Patrick's Day and green beer, and I don't drink. You know, I can, you know what, I can have green lemonade.
There you go.
You know what I want to do is I would like to spend the rest of our time. I don't want this to sound like an advertisement, although it will, because my wife, son, and I are. We've been involved in philanthropy for quite a while, and as you say, it's time, talent, resources. There's all sorts of things that are involved, and we've had three areas that we focused on. We focused on women, children, and education. And then you brought to my attention that all of them depend on clean water. That if you don't have clean water, you don't have any of them. And so I'm thinking, holy cow, I need to talk about this. So let's talk about the wells of life. And as you're listening, folks, one thing about water that I like about water is it's a solvable problem. This is not global warming. This is not worrying about the population of the world. This is about something, as I think you told me, if we had the resources in a decade, nobody would have water problems. I mean, that's crazy. You told me that 1.1 billion people in the world lack clean drinking water. Am I correct in that number?
Yes, you are.
Tell me what that means.
Well, it means a whole lot of poverty, a whole lot of suffering, and a cycle of hardship that ends with death. It means children, for the most part, are sick all the time, and it means that women are walking 3 miles each day to carry, most likely, dirty water back home to provide to their family. It's the most horrific and most brutal picture that you could ever imagine.
Some facts that I looked up that were just absolutely shocking to me. Clean water affects women and children before it affects men. That a woman will spend, where did I read this?
Six hours per day hauling water, Charlie.
6 hours
right.
A day.
Every day.
Every day hauling water. So what's left in the day? And they're not even moving really clean water all the time, are they?
No, it's one of the most horrific wastes of time. Basically, a woman is a beast, a burden. And that's about as bluntly as I can put it.
We will talk also about sanitation and about how critical sanitation is, because I was not aware that with clean water and sanitation, how serious of an issue it is, and that 2.4 billion people, one-third of the global population, lacks a toilet, and you put here, or no, you didn't put, I read, more people have a mobile phone than they have a toilet.
Yeah, sad but true.
You know, you can see why I'm laughing. It's almost comical that you would think more people have a phone, something so easy to fix as water, and we can buy phones, but we can't take care of the water needs around the world.
So let me just maybe add just a tiny little bit there, because I came to America in 1986 on a big airplane, and on row 36, the captain came on at about 32,000 feet, and he said, "Ladies and gentlemen, you can smoke today in 36 through 42. And this is in my lifetime when you could actually smoke on an airplane.
Okay.
Until there is such a thing as a movement, where there's a movement of conscience that says it's not acceptable, that a woman has to be a beast of burden, a child has to die for lack of water every 21 seconds, and people can just walk by knowing full well that this is a problem that already has a solution. It's not cancer, it's not spinal cord injuries, it's not any other problem that challenges the medical community at large. This is a problem that already has a solution, simply waiting for enough people to say, I am not willing to allow children to die. I'm not willing to allow mothers to be hurt and broken in this form of activity.
And you told me also that something that I found really fascinating is that in schools that are not supplied with water, that don't have adequate water supply, are mostly males, that you see very few girls at those schools because they're out carrying water and firewood, because the women are the beast of burden.
I think Charlie has been drinking today.
Yes, yes. It's me and my monster drinks, you know.
So just to comment on that, the reality is culturally the women and their daughters bring the firewood and haul the water. That's just the reality.
Is that in Africa, or do you find that...
That's in the developing world, and most especially, I can only talk about Uganda, where we work specifically. But if there's a school and there's no ready water available, then that is exactly the case. There's going to be more boys than girls. And during my 2008 trip, after visiting 12 schools, that was why I guess I had that moment, that aha moment that said, why would you build another school until you took care of making water available?
It may sound like a lot to a lot of people, but it doesn't sound like that much to me. It costs $6,000 to build a well.
Correct.
How many people does that give water to?
On average, a well provides water for 1,000 people.
For how long?
Well, we tell our donors and commit to them that we will maintain that well for up to 25 years. So the math is very simple. $6 brings the gift of life through clean water to 1,000 people for up to 25 years.
So over 25 years, what will that well cost?
It's going to cost $6,000 plus whatever the maintenance.
Yeah, and you know, so what would you guess? Like 10 grand?
Maybe.
Something like that.
Right. And it's an incredible investment in humanity.
For $6,000, 1,000 people, so that's why you do six bucks a person.
Yeah, we call it our $6 solution because we do a lot of presentations in schools. And the greatest joy that I receive is seeing our board members, my wife doing a presentation in front of a class. And you see a 5 and a 6 and a 7-year-old child's eyes open up when they realize that they have $6. And by bringing that $6 into their class, because we have our beautiful little collection cans, they see that they can change another person's life. That's the power of being able to serve at our local community level. That's where you see the magic begin in our young generations.
I got to interrupt for 1 second. As the engineer here saying, I've heard this before because Nick was on one of our other shows. And at the end, he didn't say it until he was off the air. How can they donate that $6? You make it so easy. Even I did it the other day.
Paul was so kind. We have the easiest way. You send one text, and I think everybody today seems to know how to send a text, and you text the word water, W-A-T-E-R, to 56512, and you can send as little as $6 or more, and that will go directly to saving one life. And that is the magic of the $6 solution.
Okay, help me here. I'm going to send these six numbers. How are you going to get money from me?
You will take out that piece of plastic in your pocket, Charlie, and you'll punch in a few numbers, and that's how it happens, the magic of the plastic.
Immediately on your smartphone opens up this little website, and it says, how much do you want to give? And you put in $6, and you fill in the full form, and presto, and it takes it right out of your thing, because it's some app that they use that collects this. I mean, they didn't make this app, but it's a way to quickly donate through a text. It was that simple. I text water to this thing, or this little website opened up. I filled in a couple of things, filled in the amount, which was $6 in my case, and that was it.
So let's add to Paul, because he opened the door here. So for St. Patrick's Day, obviously being a Irish Paddy myself, what if I could just throw out that invitation to every single person to make one text on St. Patrick's Day to 56512, type in the word water, and save one life. And I do have to say that my youngest son's name is Patrick, and I did promise him that I would say Patrick at least once on the radio. So now, son, I've taken care of that, and I've honored my fatherly duties to him.
So, you know, maybe instead of like St. Patrick's drove the snake supposedly out of Ireland, maybe we could drive the lack of water out of Africa on St. Patrick's.
Well, I think if enough people agree to do any one thing and solve any one problem, it's absolutely possible. And my favorite amazing Irish-American was John F. Kennedy. And for me, he was the incredible mind and spirit behind putting a man on the moon and bringing him back safely to Earth. When he challenged NASA in 1961, nobody believed it could be done. But it was done by 1969, and we could do the same for water, bringing water to every man, woman, and child in the world today by the end of the decade.
So you're telling me if I text, I'm working on it right now.
He's going to do it on air here.
I'm working on it right now. So no, I'm not. I won't fill out the credit card, but I just want to find. So because
it'll pop up the site.
Time.
It's pretty cool. Everybody, pull your phone.
5 6 what?
This.
512.
56512.
Everybody that's out in the audience, I'm sure, is doing the same thing.
Says, then you put it in the message, like you're going to write a message.
Tell me, what does Wells of Life do? What is your goal?
Our goal is to engage our families, churches, schools, and businesses, specifically here in Orange County in California, in bringing water to 1,000 communities in Uganda. Now, we've really refined our focus because we believe that being focused and having a measurable approach would give us the best results. So we've chosen one of the 100 districts in Uganda. It's called Mubende District. We've made a 5-year commitment to bring water to every man, woman, and child in that district. And that is exactly what we're committed to doing. And in addition, when we have a donor fund a well, they will have their name on the donation plaque. One of the true joys is when that donor receives the photographs of the well and the thanks from the local community. They really see the power of life and the power of what they've done for people.
When you said you picked a district, is that where your 1,000 wells go in this district, or is your 1,000 wells for all of Uganda?
Yeah, good question. When we started in 2010, our first well was drilled in February 2010. We were drilling wells in the northern part of Uganda. That's where the greatest need was, and that's where we obviously worked to provide water. In 2015, we had the great pleasure of meeting Father Max Sikiwala. He's a Catholic priest, American educated, came to visit our home in San Juan Capistrano, and he told a very compelling story that his parish had 10,000 parishioners that had no water. He said he had tried to raise the funds for a well and had failed. So Wells of Life made a commitment that they would provide him with a well.
One well, that only covers 1,000 people.
I know. And that's how great things happen, with a good beginning. So
okay,
what happened
great.
Was we went from 1 to 5 and from 5 to 10. And as a result, we provided water to all of the parishioners of St. John the Baptist Parish.
Okay, so, but again, my question, the 1,000, will 1,000 wells take care of all of Uganda or just this district?
Sorry, Charlie, I missed the pickup there. There's 14 million people in Uganda that lack water. So we have taken...
1,000 wells.
Right, so I'm afraid
it.
We're going to miss the mark on that one. But I have to add that Wells of Life made a commitment to 1 million of those 14 million people, which by our size as an organization is a huge commitment. And I need to tell you right now that by the end of this year, we will have drilled our 300th well.
When do you plan to do your 1,000? What's your goal for 1,000?
We plan on doing
depends
it.
Depends on how much you donate today, Charlie.
Absolutely. It really, that's a terrific
it
question.
It depends on your donation, Charlie. Are you going to write it?
We have faith that by the end of 5 years, we will have reached our 1,000th well.
Okay, I want to talk about something that really will probably hit home, especially the people who believe, as I do, in so strongly in women and children. And you were saying, you were talking about the sanitation, and you were talking about how embarrassing it is for a woman not to have sanitation, not to have a toilet, but to find a place that is just, it's really like almost ostracizing for the woman.
That's a tough question to answer. I can only say this. First of all, the statistics really don't tell you anything. I've never seen a person moved by a statistic, but I know this. If you thought of your wife or your sister or your mom, and they did not have access to the privacy of having a bathroom or a latrine, how would that make you feel? I know how it would make me feel. If you thought about your young child, your children, or in your case, your young man that's playing baseball, what would you do to support that child if they needed water? That's, I think, where people really get to see the power of standing up for those that have no voice. I know what I would do for my two sons, Manus and Patrick. I would do anything in order to be able to bring them water. The idea for sanitation is $2.4 billion. Of course you want to give every person in the world the opportunity of having water and sanitation.
We've got about 10 minutes left to go here in the show, and I'm just curious. Somebody tweeted in a question here. Why in this country are we so blessed with water, and why in the rest of the world is the water not there, or is it just the technology to pull it out of the ground? Is that all it is?
That's a great question, and the answer is very simple. The biggest and saddest part of the answer is that the water is there. Oftentimes, especially in Uganda, the water table is quite easy to reach, and children are dying with 40 feet between the water and their little bodies. And the only thing that's lacking is the well and the pump in order to bring that water to the surface. So the water is there. There are massive aquifers under the continent of Africa. So I think, looking at this in a positive way, this is one of the greatest humanitarian and community-based opportunities that every person in America and the world could literally agree on. And that would be that you bring water to every single man, woman, and child in the world and bring it as a basic human right and do it because it's simply the right thing to do and because we are able to do it.
I really like that we are able to do it. I like the unsolvable problems. I really, not the unsolvable, but the difficult. Those I enjoy. But when there is something we can actually do that can change, that can impact the lives of people tremendously. This is hugely, hugely important.
Can I add one other thing? I usually don't say anything in these shows, but one of the things that struck me, and I said this to Nick after he was on a previous show, I said, I hate to say this, but I'm so tired of hearing of Africa. Every time I see swollen bellies, famine, war, AIDS, all these things, and it never seems to go away. And I just get tired of hearing the story. It seems like a never-ending, insolvable problem. This sounds solvable to me.
Well, thank you, Paul. And solvable is the word to use because when you break down a huge problem as large as this is, nobody's asking Wells of Life to solve the problem for 1.1 billion people. We have taken on 1 million people. Now, on the 23rd of April, we are bringing our families, schools, individuals, churches, and businesses together for one day in Laguna Niguel Regional Park. We're asking them to walk or run or do whatever they need to do to cover that distance. The reason that it's 5 kilometers is because that's the distance that every woman will have to walk to carry water 365 days of the year. So we've mobilized our community to come and do that. Have our children learn that by bringing water to one other person, it can be a huge act of love. And it really teaches them something that you can't learn in a textbook. You almost can't learn it any other way than doing it. And so I would only like to make one request, and that is if you have 2 shoes and you fit them on your 2 feet and you are willing to walk so a woman does not have to carry water, join us on the 23rd of April, and you need to go to our website, which is wellsoflife.org. wellsoflife.org, and we would be delighted to have you set up a team to run, and you will never be happier than when you go through the finish line. Because it won't be a medal that'll be waiting for you. It'll be 1,000 smiling people saying, thank you for caring enough about me to run this morning to bring me the gift of water and life. It's a powerful way to start your day.
Unless you talk to somebody like me that detests running, I'd rather just give money.
Charlie, I'll take your money happily. And again, I do want to just say this because everything revolves around a personal story, especially at Wells of Life. We have a wonderful man, and I hope he doesn't mind me mentioning his name on the air, but his name is Steve Lemire, so now I've done it. He has a child who is handicapped and who is in a wheelchair. This incredible man said to me, of course, I will participate. I'm going to push my son in his wheelchair on Sunday morning so mothers can receive the gift of water. There's an 84-year-old nun who is already practicing her 5K that's going to help do this. Last year we had Renee Bondi, who is an incredible lady in a wheelchair that started our race. So I'm moved every day by the action of people. Action is an action verb, and that's really what we're asking people to do, be part of the solution.
I want to step back a little bit because I really like what Paul had to say. We are inundated with Africa, I'm going to sound callous, but with swollen bellies and all of this sort of thing that is, the need. I think what happens is the need is so, we definitely feel the need. But it is so overwhelming. We feel like, what can my dollar do?
And nothing ever changes. It never gets better. I give a dollar, and next week they're still starving, and there's still Africa, and there's still famines and fights. That seems to be something that just continues and continues. But if you build a well, it sounds like it pumps for 20 years there.
Yeah, like that is making a difference. Now, Nick, tell me, how many major organizations are there that work with water?
Charlie, there are a lot of organizations that work with water, from the big ones, Catholic Relief Services, World Vision, Charity Water, Matt Damon's Water.org, Life Water International. So there's many, many, many organizations that are involved in providing water. There just aren't enough organizations. And quite frankly, if there was enough human commitment to change this situation, there'd be more, because organizations will only do what donors put their money toward. And that's the big point that I want to make here today. You have to be part of a movement that simply stands up for those that lack water. And once that happens, it'll happen very quickly, because it's so empowering to see change. And as Paul said, when water starts coming out of a pump, I need to tell you, the picture of a person pumping water and 100 or 200 mothers standing around that well cheering, I've never seen anything more powerful than that for a thank you. Honestly, it's way more than what anybody is giving in the form of $6,000.
I can't imagine to have a couple of hundred women standing around a well just applauding that they... And
they've
this is how far from their village would this be?
Well, we try and site our wells either at churches or schools or in areas where we have a fairly large rural population. So we certainly take the walk from, 3 miles to a lot closer, maybe a half a mile. That would be our goal.
Okay. That's really informative. I'm going to wrap this up, I hope our listeners are catching it. Really fits with, this was not something that happened overnight, and this was something that was a sort of a pathway of life for you. That this is, it happened very early, even though it was 28. That was the beginning of your movement. And there's a couple of things that I've really gleaned that I think are important. I love the immigrant attitude. That strikes with me that it is, I'm not going to fail. I'm going to make this happen. I'm going to do this. And then you received an inspiration that you were convinced is of God. I totally believe that. Other people may receive an inspiration from something else that they receive, that they feel that was the resource. But once we are inspired, we can make a difference. And the other thing that I really like about water is it is a solvable problem. Oh, yeah. What I would like you to do is, Nick, how can people get involved with Wells of Life?
I would invite everybody that is interested either to learn more or to be part of Wells of Life by volunteering, being part of our advisory board, or being an ambassador, to simply contact me. And I'm going to do something that maybe is a little bit crazy, but it is coming up to St. Patrick's Day. I'm going to give out my personal cell phone number because I would love to hear from you. This is a live show, and I'm going to leave it as 949-584-6166. I will speak with you.
Would you repeat that, please?
It's 949 area code 584-6166. And my invitation is, have a conversation. And I will do my very best to let you see how many incredible opportunities that are waiting for you at Wells of Life and how you can really change the world. But most importantly, how you can move into significance and make such a difference in your own life.
I just want to add one thing. I usually stay silent in this, but I've been moved to talk, and you open the door to an Irishman, and you can't shut it. I suggested Nick come on the show, and I thought it was a perfect fit for what you've been talking about, Charlie, in this way. One, you're always trying to open people's eyes. There are more choices than you think you are for that next chapter. So many of us are scared of change in that next chapter, whatever that chapter is. And we think, I can't do that. I can't make it. I don't know what to do. And you're always saying, well, look, here's somebody who became an artist at some age, or somebody who travels even though they don't have any money. The possibilities are bigger than we think they are. And I think his story points to that. He was able to take a terrible situation, got divorced and other things, and it happened, and all of a sudden turned this into a positive thing. That change turned out to be, it was painful, but it turned out to be positive. The other thing that always struck me is, you're always talking about passion and you're always talking about purpose. And all I hear in this guy is passion and purpose.
Yeah, tell me.
And yet we somehow think passion and purpose only comes with making money. There are other for some it does, but there are other choices available that you can find passion and purpose even without money, just as your friend Taryn can travel without money. Money doesn't have to be the excuse that stops us from doing all these things.
Yes, but my friend Taryn is also motivated by passion of helping other people. That's really strong. I will be candid on here. I have had a vision for women, children, and education. That mm-hmm. is where we have a little, tiny little, not quite foundation, but,
right.
You're
raising money for it. You're helping find things you can fund.
Yeah,
with this thing, right?
And I got a voice speaking to me, I want to say 6 months ago. And it's just kind of filtered through. Yeah. And you know what the voice was?
No.
It trickled.
It was, oh, there's an image.
It was,
okay.
It was water.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. And there was this thing of just saying water. And I think the big thing for me and what I'd really like, going to actually wrap it up right now, water is a resolvable problem. It is something that as Nick has pointed out, if we were to really focus our attention on it in 10 years, it would not be a problem. We would not have a problem. We would not have increased education, increased the benefits of women. There are so many positive things. Nick, I am really I'm really honored that you would come on, and I admire greatly your passion and what you are doing. And as we have spoken, believe me, I'm going to tell you, folks, it took everything in the world not to have him talk for 40 minutes on water. I had to force him to talk about himself. Thank you so much. And I really wish Wells of Life the best. I think you're really onto something terrific. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Charlie, and a big happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody and all your listeners.
Okay, and this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Life. I will include all of the contact information with Nick on the show notes. And please, as you go to thenextchapter.life, sign up, get our podcast and our blogs weekly. Love to hear from you. Bye for now, Charlie.
You've been listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie, as he talks about turning the page on his life and yours. Brought to you by Orange County's only community radio station, octalkradio.net.